Hello, this is Brian Leo, and today I'm here with Melissa E. Logan, who is one part of the art performance band Chicks on Speed. I'm not sure if that's a good introduction, but Chicks on Speed, what formed in 1997, is that correct?
Hi, Brian.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, in 1997 in Munich, Germany. Although neither of us are German. Yeah.
Right. So Melissa Logan was born in upstate New York. And you were a painting major at the Academy of Arts in Munich. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was studying with the professor Ben Villikens, and it was this, yeah, type of studies where one has like certain professors that one studies with. So, and before then, I was studying in Utica, New York, sort of a very basic education program, the basics of art, like painting, photography,
So that was your
two-year
you did a
program.
little undergrad in Utica, and then
Yes.
you decided to just go to Munich. You have some relatives out there or friends or
No, I
family?
just didn't know, like CalArts was pretty far for me to go, like geographically and financially at the time, and I got a scholarship from Chicago, but Chicago I felt was okay between New York, LA, I don't know, and so I just didn't do either. I just actually wanted to go to Europe to meet people in the East and in these new countries that were just opening up after a cold, stupid Cold War. So I wanted to get to know the world actually.
Right. So what type of paintings were you making at the Academy of Arts in Munich? Were they abstract type?
Yeah, like strangely enough, I happened to do work for Soloway while there was an installation happening in Utica, and they wanted a few volunteers from the art school. So I was dabbing paint on a Soloway, and actually loved this minimal and conceptual painting. And then when I was accepted in Munich, partially because of the Soloway work that I'd done on his piece, my professor happened to be a big fan of Soloway. Anyway. So then I actually started to do quite minimal color field painting.
Right. I think I saw some of them online. Solowit has that permanent installation up at Beacon too, right? I think have you I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I think he had students use like pencil, a graph or graphite pencil too. If I'm not mistaken. I think that's Solowit, yeah. That
Okay.
and they just covered a whole entire wall. It was very like meticulous. I forgot what kind of I don't know if they were points or circles or something, but
It could be some of, I just saw one recently in Napoli, and in the museum there, it was also like one red round circle and one blue one. And it was also just done, I think, with ballpoint pens, but also in a amazing, like, yeah, the concepts are fantastic.
And then you got, I mean, like I read something about you attending some parties at Munich, and there was one location. Was it called like, is it pronounced Seppa or something, or like this bar or cafe that had some Dada roots that you were able to like meet the other I mean, your partner at Chicks on Speed, Alex Leslie Murray, is
Yeah,
that correct? Oh,
as
yeah.
Alex Murray Leslie.
As Alex Murray
Yeah.
Leslie.
Yeah, she had been involved in a party that was happening, and that was called Maria Bar. And that was also because of the very Catholic roots of the area, Bavaria, that they sort of make poked fun and jokes about Maria Bar. And then Zeppi is also, the Zeppi is a sort of a slang word for Joseph. And so ours was called Zeppi Bar. So I started a new bar with Alex. So. But then it transitioned into doing, yeah, performance art and installation and musical performances. And basically, it was for us to all get together despite the internal hierarchies that existed within the school system and also the politics of professors, etc., and to have
Right.
this like our own territory.
So is would you say, I mean, according to the internet, it's kind of like where Chicks on Speed kind of like was created or formed. Do you think that was like a catalyst of it of
It
because
was a
of the
different formation of people, and definitely this activity was this was detrimental for the further work, because then what we did as Chicks on Speed, we branched off and focused on music and Oh shoot. No, actually we didn't. Actually the first thing was I was selling art to BMW, and then I asked Alex to do it with me, and the paintings had to have a group name or else one would have to hand it in as an individual, and that was the first time we used the name Chicks on Speed. Actually, was to sell these two paintings to BMW.
Wow.
Ironically, that was such a commercial job, but it was really amazing because we made a bit of pocket cash, and then with that we did performance pieces, and that's how we got really into electronic music, like Kraftwerk. Maybe that Autobahn connects us to Kraftwerk, BMW, and Chicks on Speed somehow. Then, yeah, working in an avant-garde way.
So do you think like the speed part of the moniker is from, does it have anything to do with like speed as in like velocity, like going fast? Or so, 'cause I told a friend about like, oh, I'm gonna interview a member of Chicks on Speed, and he was laughing, and he was probably thinking of speed as in like the the drug. Yeah, so I mean, which is I guess people can see it either way. Like, yeah, so and yeah, so making this, I mean, like, get it. Where, I mean, did you have musical background before you started producing like that around that time? Like, were you learning and experimenting and just getting your hands on electronical equipment around 97, 98?
It wasn't so interesting, really. I mean, we all enjoyed music. And of course, with Zeppi Bar, music had been then a larger part of it. But I was very ambitious about being a painter and an artist. And I mean, music, I had learned to play the saxophone and earlier forced to play the violin. And my father was a music teacher, so it was always just something there. So nothing I really thought about.
Wow. Okay.
But I mean, there were a lot of influences, and also, of course, the European wave music was very interesting. I had difficulty with music because I didn't really like folk music that much, and I really despised rock and roll. So I was always very glad to escape from rock.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's one huge song, like We Don't Play Guitars. Which to me is like a reference to like the cock rock of like the 80s especially. I mean, this, I guess they say that, I think I read online that maybe the term cock rock was maybe written about in a New York magazine called Rat in like 1970. And I think they were referring to like Led Zeppelin, The Doors or something, but also like, the idea, like the Motley Crue and like the 80s, misogynistic type like bands. And I mean, in 2004 with that song, and like to me it was like using those synths and the electronic drums has had this like 80s vibe to it, and like the colors that you use like for your art and your stage performances, like this vivid neon colors and stuff, like kind of around that time, like when I started like learning more or getting into the music of Chicks on Speed in the early 2000s. Like, I think also like fashion in general too, like there seemed to be like a kind of like a reference to like 80s kind of style that was happening around, or that's how I felt at least in New York around like the early 2000s. And so in 2004, Melissa and Alex performed and exhibited their visual artwork at Jeffrey Deitch Gallery or Deitch Projects on Wooster Street. So that's where I was fortunate enough to meet Melissa. So that was 20 years ago, about 20 years ago now. So you have done so many things since then, according to the internet. And do you want to talk a little bit about that experience at Deitch Projects on Wooster Street in 2004?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, 2004. And okay, I mean, back to then, We Don't Play Guitars. Yes, that was a partial in play, but also partial seriousness about an attitude toward instrument making and just in general art making, that we don't need to function within the parameters of being a virtuoso. And actually, then with guitars, then what do we need guitars for? Well, let's take this high-heeled shoe guitar, cut it up, and then, oh no, let's actually turn it into a guitar. So we ended up building these instruments out of, partially out of irony, and then actually making then instruments that we would love to play on stage. And one of them is the high-heeled shoe guitar, and another one is a hat, which has a microphone and then speakers coming out of it, and wearable other pieces that, for example, a heartbeat machine we had for a while. It was a little bit difficult with feedback. And so very fast from the stage, we began to build these objects with then which would also then go into the museums and the exhibitions. And yeah, this was only possible through these exhibitions that also would allow us to move into a space like Jeffrey Deitch's fantastic Worcester Street space, where we would turn the actual exhibition space into a production laboratory. And Brian was, why were you there? You were with a group of people, or were you performing then with us?
What I remember from that experience, I think I found out that you were Chicks on Speed was performing. It might have been your last, like, 'cause you did two live performances on stage that they had built for you, and it might have been this the last performance. Like maybe, and for some reason, I had a bag of paintings with me, and that I made, and then you at one point, I think, I mean, Tina Weymouth was a special guest that night. Annette, what's her last name?
Anat Ben David.
Yeah, she was there and she performed. And then there was another woman who performed a version of Whitney Houston's what's that famous song? Like "And I." Yeah, that song. Yeah, that was interesting. And then I think you invited the audience on stage. So there were a lot of people on stage at one point. I think I remember. So that and then somehow everyone left, and I was just hanging out, and then it was just like, just you guys were there, and we were just hanging out at the end of the show at the space, and then I gave a couple paintings away too. I think I gave one to you and to Anat and to Alex, and there was the person from Spain who was there. I forgot his name, but he was hanging out with everybody too. But there was, yeah, I think he was
Was it
affiliated.
Arakis, the curator? Arakis Arakistan?
Maybe, I don't know. I just remember he had a jean jacket on, and like back then, I mean, this is before smartphones, so I just happened to have like a digital camera, so I was happy to like take some blurry pictures. So that was before, that was before a lot of things. So much has changed since 2004. But it was such a fun experience,
Okay,
and.
because during this residency time that we did at Deitch Projects, we made a film, so a 20-minute short film that's actually quite good. It's called Visitors, and it's about getting lost in New York and actually land from a spaceship on a rooftop in Brooklyn. And yeah, so it's a short film of us, Chicks on Speed as aliens, landing and disappearing into the city. But Jeffrey, he really had this amazing stage built up, this custom stage that was there just for the performance. And also there was pressure from our manager, who said, "Oh, Jeffrey came," and then a collector came and really wanted to collect something, and we're really looking at what there was. And basically it was all this set up. Teresa was the stylist. Teresa Logan, my sister, was styling our film. And so we had the whole wardrobe set up there as well, and then we would start to stream parts of the filming that we had done during the day. So this kind of laboratory and situation, the collector didn't really know how to collect this, and Jeffrey didn't know how to sell this. So there was a bit confusion on that part, and which is also an interesting dialogue now, to think about that, the times have changed so much in the way of art making that. We had a book with Edward Booth Cliburn that we also launched at the time called Chicks on Speed. It's a project. So also the exhibition was like, "Look, Jeffrey, this is a whole project. What we're showing is this, it's about the doing, not the, product. It's the project." And I mean, little did we know that actually the whole art world would focus so much on product that now I think we're shifting back to people thinking like, okay, not everything has to be market focused. We can have like great works that are just works there and almost, retain this innocence.
I mean, I always thought that that Jeffrey Deitch could sell anything he wanted for any price he wanted. But yeah, that's interesting. You did have two-dimensional pieces on display as well, like large. Maybe they're, I think I remember something being like 12 feet high, like
Oh yeah, we had these murals, yeah.
right. And I mean, since then, if I'm correct, or if the internet had provided me with the correct information, you have lectured and exhibited your visual art and performed, solo and with Chicks on Speed at various institutions throughout, New York City. So like at the MoMA and then MoMA PS1, is that correct? And the Tate Britain and the what's the museum in Kyoto? It's
Yeah,
a
the National Museum there. That was also a very large performance piece, which we did.
Wow.
So,
And what are the at the Pompidou as well?
yeah.
So was this all like after 2004, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's like, that's congratulations on, all of these places that you were able to perform at in and exhibit at.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, these were also with larger groups of people. With, for example, MoMA was with Douglas Gordon when he had a solo exhibition there, that they began to do these performances close to the sculpture garden. So we came in and did that. And later this became then the series that they did regular, I think once a month.
Right, Chicks on Speed has collaborated with artists from different disciplines, right? How do these collaborations enhance your creative process and the final product? I don't know if you want to answer that, but
Yeah,
or do you have any
it's.
memorable experiences or challenges that arose while collaborating with artists? At these venues or
Yeah, our collaborators are usually also very good friends or become them. For example, Douglas is he's in Berlin now, and yeah, the process of collaboration can also be, that's true. In the beginning, it was a little bit shy. Because also the type of performing we were doing was quite edgy. And then to, suddenly include a new member in this quite intimate, or like intimate but explosive and also quite exhausting performing, it's extremely intense. So with him, when we first met the first few times, it did more smaller scale performing. And then later on, when these larger scale performances happened in first Vienna with Francesca von Habsburg's sponsored performance at the Gartenbau Kino, this was a very large piece we did, and this then pretty much made us ready for the Pompidou and for the Kyoto performances, where it was really 800 people sold out performances, where it was just so much like technique. A large tech team of craziness. I mean, I guess Kyoto was also kind of crazy because it was a lot of nudity and paint and things, and people were just like, whoa, this is just insane. And it was a quite conservative museum, so that was quite impressive. And
Were you performing some of the Chicks on Speed music then, or
yeah,
was that yeah?
collaborating with a local artist girl group called OIOO, and they're this legendary sound artist, and really also then, yeah, in general, also working with people from the area that we also respect very much.
Right, I
That's also
think
part of it.
I mean I think maybe another collaboration that I saw was for maybe less intense, but I think during the pandemic, there was a song called "Vaccinate Me, Baby." That when what do you remember? What year you guys composed that song?
It was during the pandemic.
Okay,
Yeah, it's
and
a
then
silly joke.
the video is from a group
That's from
in Mexico
Mexico.
City. Okay, yeah. So I saw that, and I think that was. You have, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I think on your website there was, I think, did I read something about like opportunities for artists to collaborate on? I'm not sure if it's remixes or something, but there's a It says like phone at chicksonspeed.com. It's like on your website. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, I actually don't know what that is,
Oh,
but
really?
that's
Okay.
funny. Maybe Alex did that. She's teaching in Norway, and maybe
Right.
it was
Yeah.
one of the collaborators for online, maybe, because we're doing a lot of online performing. Maybe it has to do with that. I'm not sure.
Right. I spoke briefly with Alex via email, and Alex will have a separate podcast interview in the near future. You do have a performance coming up in Germany, right?
Yeah.
On the 17th or something,
On the 26th.
on the 26th.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit for a second, or what is that's going to be? What's that performance
We're
like?
just headlining a festival. It's just a normal Chicks on Speed performance where we
It's a music
perform.
festival.
It's music festival, yeah.
And what's the location again?
Oh, actually it's called Duisburg. And this is just very much in the center of Germany.
Wow. As I was conducting a little research online, I noticed also that there was a point where maybe it was around 2004 where you guys had opened up for James Brown and the Red Hot Chili Peppers in England. I'm not sure were you performing at that at shows
This
with
is a
them?
difficult story, really, because
Oh.
one of my sisters was involved with one of them romantically, and then they had some difficulty, and then at the same time Anthony asked us to do that, and I was like, Anthony, I don't know. Yeah, I want to, I'd love to, but I got to stay fa faithful to family and my band. They were like, come on, we should do it. And then a very strange thing happened that my sister had then also said, like, look, if your band really wants to do it, go ahead. It will really, it's a great opportunity. So then I was like, okay, whatever. Yes, sure, we'll do it. And then I went to play Primavera Sound in Spain, and then I found out that I was pregnant, and the doctor was like, no more stages. She was just like, stay home, chill. And then I was like, Anthony, sorry, I can't do it. But then the other band, they went anyway and did it.
Okay.
And it was kind of, I don't know, it was not very easy on them because we don't play guitars in front of Red Hot Chili Peppers fans. It
Like,
didn't really work out so well. So I was like, kind of like, okay, brave soldiers, great you guys did it, but maybe it's just not the place for Chicks on Speed and in these kind of silly stadiums, guys. Come on.
yeah, it was. I mean, that it's very interesting that the Chicks on Speed had that opportunity to, to perform in front of that mainstream audience at that moment, and then I mean afterwards in all of these museums and institutions like these in art galleries after it. But I think yeah, that was it must have been an experience.
Maybe it was better when we were opening for Kraftwerk in Australia. I think that
Oh,
was more suitable.
sure. Yeah. I mean, also, like, we didn't mention the moniker Electro Clash that I guess they had been using. Like, I mean, that's what they used to describe the genre of music that I mean, Chicks on Speed is associated with. Did you ever? I mean, things that were going on, like with Peaches and Gonzalez and like Berlin, like with the Kitty Yo like album or label. Did you, I mean, you have collaborated with Peaches as well, right? And I mean that's I mean I would I mean that was she's also associated with that with Electro Clash. And yeah, I love I mean I'm a fan of the beats that you create and just the content and yeah, I mean Chicks on Speed music is I mean it's it has so many references to I mean there could be references to other art movements and fashion and some empowering themes and I think some songs that you released later on that I checked out on Spotify, which I think I bought the first two CDs, which was where like will Save Us, Will Save Us
Will
is
Save
one,
Us All.
and then the 99 Cents.
Okay.
But 99 Cents is not on Spotify. I don't know why, but it's not, that album's not on Spotify. And you can check it later. And then you have like the Space Bar, which I didn't know like about. That's another album, right? And then is there, what's the one after that?
Cutting the Edge.
Okay. There's
So,
also a collaboration with Julian Assange. Excerpts, is that, I mean, they're from, is it, are they excerpts from an interview, or do you want to talk about
yeah,
that?
sure. Yeah, with Julian Assange. So when WikiLeaks happened, I found it extremely fascinating, and my friend Angela Richter and I, so we just spoke about, oh my God, what is going on? Cannot believe this flood of information that's suddenly available to everybody. And I happened to be in London, and she flew in extra for this talk between Julian Assange, Zizek, and Amy Goodman was moderating it. And it was a sold-out house. And like we had quickly bought tickets online. And then Angela, she actually got a ticket, an extra ticket to go have a dinner with Julian Assange to as a fundraiser for WikiLeaks. And so that's how she met him. And she's a theater maker. And then she gave Julian her number and said, you know, she'd like to interview him for a theater piece. And she has been, over the years, she's done a few theater pieces with him, very good ones. And she does a lot of research into them and collects the information and did, I think, a few hundred interviews with Julian, actually. So Angela gave us the interview. This she selected a part that for us to use in this song, and then we brought the song to the embassy and went into the embassy 2015. I really don't know the date. I shouldn't say it. But anyway, so we did go into the embassy and played him the song, and then met Joseph and the other, you know, his other assistants, amazing people, his amazing team, really fantastic people he works with. And then he's a very precise person. So when we came in the embassy, then he looked up and said, oh, and here are the so-called chicks on speed. So he wouldn't call us chicks on speed. He was very, very kind. And he was a little bit strange, like with me, not me so much, with Alex, he was kind of like checking her a little bit, like asking her questions about where she grew up and where she was from, et cetera, because they're
They're
both
both.
Australian. So, but then after a while, then we were okay. And then like the atmosphere was then more relaxed. But it was definitely such a experience that I'll never forget. And then it was a very long evening. So then I remember then, yeah, sort of parts of it then coming up, like him speaking about the different films that they were working on, different projects where he had the post-it notes on the wall at that time. Yeah.
Wow. I believe also, did you do a benefit concert? Was it earlier this year for Julian Assange? Some live events in Europe? Is was
We
that
did
this
one in
year?
April, but that was already last April, so a year and a half ago
Okay.
almost. And there will be more. Sadly, it's still necessary to do more concerts for him because they still have him locked away. So we will be doing more. At the moment, there's the discussion of Trafalgar Square and also in Munich. So, but definitely there's going to be much happening for him, of course, to save him.
All right. I believe on that album also, I think I think Yoko Ono is featured on one of the songs also. I'm not sure if there are samples or but do you know what song I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's a song Utopia, and we've wanted her to be part of this so much. And we were
Yeah,
with,
I mean, that's a great song. I
oh,
love it. It's so
thanks.
fun.
We were with this, we, you know, we were with Peter Weibel, and Peter Weibel is an extremely important artist to us. And first of all, because he worked with Valley Export, and Valley Export was on the top of our list of like goddesses of art that we wanted to be like when we were at art school. So we were always bowing down very low to Valley Export. And Peter Weibel, then we saw his work more and more interesting, but he was so into theory. But then we got to know him and worked with him. And then Peter Weibel, he said, "Come now, we're going to go see Yoko Ono in Vienna." And we went there to her talk. So we recorded the talk, and then we wanted to go backstage and talk to her, but she wouldn't speak to anybody. And but we didn't want to not have her on the song, so we just kind of cheekily put her on the song. And I say, "Thank you, Yoko Ono, very much that you didn't sue us for this, because it's too cheeky and we shouldn't have done it. But at the same time, we respect you and love you so much, and your words were so fantastic. It had to be on this song, Utopia, because we know, like, you want, like, we all want a peaceful world. This is what we all want. Like, we don't want violence." And just like the way she said it.
Yeah,
And
that's a quote from if you listen to the song, it's My Utopia. That's the name of the song, right? Or just is it you?
Utopia.
Okay, it's
Yeah.
Utopia. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
So, I mean, I also recommend that to other artists. If there's stuff, just sometimes this legal stuff, if you want to just respect and like loves the people and loves the art, I think one has to just like go for it. And sometimes, yeah, with copyright and all these things, it's like made to, it's made to like protect the artists. And but if one has to make good art, you just gotta do it. You know what I mean? And hopefully then the artist will also understand, and then in the end, hopefully they'll even be happy to be a part of it, Because it's not just like stealing and taking and not changing, but it's also like respect and, passing the torch.
There's one particular installation that I think I saw a video about and was referenced in some interviews that I saw online. Is it called On Air? Was that at what could you tell us what museum that was? That was is that the like a is a several day like audio can you explain it a little bit so it's an installation called On Air that was that a Chicks on Speed project or
No, I did this.
that was so that was your installation would you mind
Yeah.
talking about that?
Yeah, this was a difficult piece. I was doing a sort of a installation piece in a underused urban landscape, and it was a large storefront window kind of by a highway where a few little art galleries are down in Cologne. And I had a grant so I could pay my musicians and my team okay. But it wasn't that much. But we ended up performing that every day for half an hour. And every day it was a new kind of a concert. And we were inside this window. And it sounds easy, but for some reason it was really exhausting. I guess also because we were playing different music every day. I was playing saxophone some of the time, so my saxophone playing got better. And then at the time I met a political refugee from Kurdistan. And she also joined. Incidentally, she was even like still getting her in her refugee status, so she had to quickly then travel back to her place that she was living in these barracks at night. But it was really so it had this kind of like edginess to it, where it was partially like sort of established and already and funded by the town of Cologne, but then it was partially just like all of us bunching together and doing what we could to like, to have this sort of like sing-songy soundscapes. And then these political messaging would also come into it, partially by Heysha Nitirk, who was singing about her peoples. And she's an extremely gifted musician. And then partially from a poet, a beat poet. And Louise Landis Levy, who also contributed poetry to it. So it was very sort of local musicians, and then also reaching out internationally about, at the same time also part of the highway and forests were being trees were being occupied by people, and the police were moving in and pulling the demonstrators out of the trees. That was happening at, very close to Cologne. So, like, it's very interesting when one just does something like this, how the news or how the people who are individually involved in the on the ground politics of the moment, then come into the performances, and also generational themes also find their way in. So I recommend that, and it was a very valuable piece in that way of just having a sort of a format and a space and not knowing what's going to happen, and then it actually like blossoms into this piece that actually has quite an impact.
Right. I think Alex, when I spoke with her briefly, she mentioned how Fluxus is on her end a big component of my happenings and performance art that she said that she would like to discuss more, but would you mind talking about maybe like the different, you're multidisciplinary with like visual, you know, visual two-dimensional work and fashion and performance and installation. Does the music like help? I mean, is it like reciprocated with like, or does the music produce the visuals, or the visuals produce the music, or I mean, if that makes any sense. The music and the you know, the other mediums that you use, like how does that, would you be able to speak about that, or is it too vague?
Well, no, it's fine. I mean, no, because I was just thinking then about these installations and the situation, and maybe with on air, and then that's true. Actually, I became interested in sound and music in public space, and then over the years I began working with different objects and actually sound installation more, and also how one can also have pieces which are then played by the visitors. And this is something that I've developed over a few years, is working with antenna and different, like, I thought it was triggering, but actually I mixed in different layers of sound and triggering, that it became sort of something that's between a player and an instrument. I don't really know yet what it is. So, so some of it becomes from like urges and ideas, and just, for example, doing these projects that one doesn't really know what they are, and they take on their own dynamic. But then also the step beyond that, where one also sees then, for example, a funny statistic in society, like a typical European society, you have, you know, 80% of the people who would like to do musizieren, who would like to play music together, and, you know, 16% are musically trained. So then I think, oh, okay, interesting. Let's take this between percentage. Let's make a very interesting, easily playable thing that, you know, who never bothered to learn to instrument and don't have time or whatever, it's, you know, made for them to enjoy this feeling that one can actually get from playing together, because that is quite a unique experience. And I guess also, like, you know, in neuroscience, there is also particular parts of the brain that it also does activate, which is, you know, this motion. You're listening at the same time, you're moving at the same time, and you're also interacting with other humans at the same time. So so it's partially connected then to thinking about it. And then, of course, the large step is then actually, you know, finding the right technology that can do these things. You know, circuit boards, which kind of, you know, and then also composing the music for it. And there are many components, so that some of these ideas can take a few years to realize.
So yeah, having that interactive participatory component is something that you use with your installation and work, right? I mean, people are able to participate with in some of the installations.
Yeah.
What was that like? There was one video I think I saw, or a clip of, like the cigar box instruments that you like, there were cigar box synthesizers. Yes. That was a Chips on Speed.
But these are older ones.
That was an older one. Yeah.
But these ones with the antennas, this is a newer one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the cigar boxes, these are from, I mean, cigar boxes are these classic instruments that are,
mm-hmm.
But definitely antenna piece. It's called Spark. This is definitely more advanced than the cigar boxes.
With the antenna piece, I'm thinking like a theremin or something, but I have no idea. Could you elaborate a little bit on like what the like how
Okay,
people,
well,
yeah.
physically it was a it looked like a landed satellite. Maybe it landed a bit bumpy, but anyway, it was sort of like satellite pieces and held together, and then with antennas sticking out, so quite haphazard. And this was exhibited for the Museum of Literature in Marbach, so in Germany, outside of Stuttgart. So the visitors then could play. It had four antennas,
Wow.
this one.
Okay, I'll have to look it up. Yeah, I don't think I came across that one. And let's see.
Oh, probably because they did all the press in German. That's a good point.
I mean, what I did see, I think from if I mean, I saw on air, was it like was it a blue room with no, that's a
No, it's
different
open air.
performance. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, so what was that blue room? There's an installation of, it looked like it was like a blue room and there were maybe some like squares, like maybe some Day-Glo color squares posted on a wall. I'm not sure what performance that was or exhibition, but it was something else that I came across online. What about maybe any projects that you're, I mean, you're performing on, in Germany and on the 26th, you said, or 27th?
I think
And
that's, yeah.
what type of visual art are you working on anything at the moment or
Yeah, I'm doing an exhibition in Brussels on the 15th of November. And it's the Samata Bookshop, and they have exhibition spaces above it.
what
And
type of work are you going to show over there?
part of the antenna
Okay.
piece, so that will be there. And yeah, sound pieces, sound installations.
All
And
right.
also some photos, which I did upstate here with Saigon, with Sydney, my son and my stylist sister Teresa Logan. So we found yeah, it's kind of funny. I wouldn't really show this, but it's up where she has this house in Palenville. There's a walk where you find like Jesus and different statues, and one of them is a Jesus with the hands up, but now the cross part fell down. So instead of it's Jesus on the cross, now it's sort of a victorious Jesus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I thought this was interesting that even like a religion that always shows someone all suffering and hurt and hanging there dying is suddenly changed to this person that it suddenly looks like they're actually standing there with their hands up and almost happy.
Wow.
So, because
Yeah.
I have like, of course, yeah, a lot of these religions I find very strange, how it makes one feel as a human being, and also the whole, yeah, colonialism, enslavement of people, and all this bizarre stuff that so feels so far away that it's maybe I can even revisit it a little bit in a way of being like, okay, Jesus, now you've done your job, now you're also free, maybe.
Wow. So I mean you spend your time in upstate New York, in Berlin, in Belgium, is that correct? Or also in Hamburg too? Are these, can you talk about like where you bounce around year to year? Are those like three locations that you call home?
Berlin is a main landing spot, and I'm starting to teach at the Angewandte at the art school in Vienna. So it looks like I'll be moving there, and I maybe will really move somewhere and have a permanent residence. Let's see.
Right. So I mean, fortunately, I was able to meet Sydney and Teresa of a few weeks ago, and that's how I was able to correspond with Melissa to get this interview happening. Yeah, Sydney's making artwork as well, and he's, you know, he when I speak to Sydney, I feel like I'm talking to he's, I mean, he's about 18 right now, right? And yeah, but I mean, he's very mature, and he's got a lot of great ideas, and yeah, then you said that he might be, I mean, he will be contributing to the exhibit in Belgium in
He's
some capacity.
because well, I mean, they're photographs that we did some photo shoots upstate, so Sid will be in it. And yeah, Sidney lives in Hamburg with his father, so I go there sometimes, but I'm mostly Berlin based and sometimes Brussels, because just Brussels is a very fantastic place.
I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about like this, like, because sometimes it is challenging, once you have kids and like art making practices and this balance between work and life. Is there anything that you'd meant like to talk about with that? I mean, many artists find it, yeah, I mean, challenging to make the balance or have a balance between, you know, raising kids and stuff. And I think there's some article I came across recently about that, you know, particularly for female artists, it being a, you know, more of a challenge or something. I mean, have you ever, do you want to, would you mind talking any, about that or?
Yeah, definitely in the music world, there's, if one said, oh, I had a kid, what, there was also a lot of shock, like, oh, okay, as if the career is over or something. I mean, which is such a joke because, anyway, I never thought of music that way, is that it just was a career. It was always, one's life, or for a while one would tour and then also just do something else. It never felt like it was, that one was just living for that kind of a music world. So. But actually, in general, I would say that being an artist and having children works together very well. And one secret is to break up with the parents, like if the parents break up, because then you have allocated time when you're with the child and when you have your time with your art. And actually, like, I shouldn't have been so sad about the breakup so long. I should have just gotten up right away and been like, yoo-hoo. So, yeah, people just remember. It's actually a real advantage. And I don't know why it's not spoken about enough, that it's really awesome then to have like different partners, and really if the parents, then then one really can deal with giving the child and giving the family like the love that because kids really do need so much love, so.
That's, yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective. I mean, like a lot of people trying to hold on to traditional, you know, kind of family settings, and so.
Yeah, and it's strange because actually so many people break up after having kids because it's such a different relationship. Also, it's so many years. It's like, I had been together with Sydney's father already, I don't know, like 10 years, whatever. It was just like,
Things
so.
change. Things do change a lot after, yeah, like, I mean, besides marriage or whatever, like after having a child, and that's, you know, there's so much information online about, you know, that experience, and
Yeah. But then just in general, being an artist, having kids and then having the flexibility also to travel sometimes with them, this is the best thing to do with them. And even though there are all these constraints from school and this and that, it's like the biggest hurdle is just to, jump those constraints and bring the kids as much as possible. And even though sometimes it's a bit more difficult, a lot more expensive, it just like, imagine people who spend all that money on tutors. It's just like the travel and all that is like the best thing you can
Best
do.
education, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I met him, he just seems very worldly and like well-rounded, and I was impressed. And then we were talking about music, and then he mentioned, we somehow we talked about Chicks, he mentioned Chicks on Speed, and then I'm like, what? No way. Yeah. So but he we were talking about his visual art for you know, for the earlier in the evening and things like that.
Did you
And
get a
I got
t-shirt?
stickers.
Oh, you got stickers.
Yeah,
Okay,
of
okay.
the kind of like a Cheshire
Is that your
cat.
t-shirt?
This is my T-shirt of a
I
pan.
love
It's a
that.
panda. It's a silk screen that I made.
Oh,
Thanks.
that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Maybe he'll do a trade with you.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that Yeah, and then Teresa again is a stylist, and she did a mini performance that was like remind it felt like a yeah like a, the aesthetic of Chicks on Speed with her performance in her apartment in New York City. She had the strobe light on, and I think there was I mean it, I was it was awesome to witness. And she was just having fun, and then she was rapping, and but there was neon, like I'm not sure what she was wearing, but it was a cool experience. So how much have you collaborated with Teresa, like on some of the aesthetics of Chicks on Speed, like outfits and things? Would you mind talking about that?
Yeah, I mean, the design we haven't really collaborated on so much, but more as when we are making film or video pieces that, for example, the short film Visitors, she styled that one. And then when we performed, she would come backstage, of course, and style us for shows. So yeah, she was part of it, but she was, when we were a lot in New York, around, 2002, 2010, she was doing very high, more high scale, like commercial styling. And now, more recently, she's gotten into film styling. So, yeah. And then going into art performance and poetry, this is very
Oh yeah.
much like this new writing that she's been doing.
Right. I believe I think I saw that she was performing in some venues in New York City, some spoken word. I think I'm not sure if it was in the West Village or something, but yeah.
Yeah, it's very precious, and it's also she's someone that both of the younger sisters from our clan, Johanna and Teresa, they were club kids. So, and it was this extremely important era of New York, and where, like 42nd Street was something else. It's like doesn't look like it does right now, that's for sure. And also, Limelight and these places, like they were, going to, doing parties and
So they were going there, and they were probably going to the Limelight in the 80s. Probably it was
no,
like
not
the.
that young. It was the 90s club kid scene.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
yeah. So that's what they're writing on and working on. So it's very much like OG New York things. And I mean, I don't know. I have to say, I just do feel a little bit sad about parts of New York that's getting lost. It's pretty tragic. So I can like come here and be here a little bit, but they're part, I turn a corner and I look for a bookshop and it's not there. And it's like, damn. I know, I'm like, I know some things should change, but some things one should keep.
I think everyone's just getting priced out. It's just that's it, and it's I mean, right now, I mean, since the bail reform laws and the pandemic, we have some of this old New York back as far as homelessness and crime. And then, wherever artists go, to relocate and to try to start something up, maybe the last place is like in Bushwick, or I mean, it's coming back to Lower East Side. There's a lot of places, a lot of galleries happening, here too. I guess some tenement buildings have spaces below that they're offering for reasonable rates and stuff. So there are a lot of galleries that have opened up in LES. Like so, that is if you walk around more, you'll encounter a lot of spaces, and that's a nice that's a little refreshing than like how it was in Chelsea for like 2000 to like 2000, 15 or whatever. So like there's a lot of galleries in this area right now, which is good. And you did, when we were talking about the Yoko Ono, clip in the song, you said that, yeah, like when, if artists find, things to be appropriate, they should, not be hesitant sometimes to, incorporate certain elements. But in general, maybe, what advice would you give to aspiring musicians and artists who are looking to explore multidisciplinary approaches to their creative work?
Okay.
Or maybe based on your experiences, how can maybe
Yeah, I mean,
artists
when we started Chicks, it was really, yeah, it was very much of like a gang of people. So, but then, yeah, we would do these actually, yeah, very much like just do as much as you can, actually. Because actually, we would do so many like exhibitions, setting up stuff ourselves. And also the performing, like so much of it was just like, okay, that one, that one, that one, bam, 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 you
And
know?
but I mean, so it's a do it
Like not wait
yourself,
around, yeah, not wait
yeah,
around for people to book us. It was more like,
right. You
okay, we're
start your
here, we're
own
ready to
thing,
play, we're there.
right.
No, but we'd also approach people and just be like, okay, we're gonna come in and do it, you know, like that.
I mean, that's
And then
great.
like, yeah, self-organize and do it alone, you know, on our own also, but then also go to others. So Alex was also really good at that with this, yeah, with this promoter in Munich, and she was like, yeah, we're gonna come and da-na-na. And he was like, okay.
This is like when you
Or
were in your 20s, I guess.
yeah.
Like, yeah. So,
So just like, yeah, because sometimes people they think that, oh, people will get ask you to do things. No. You just like go in and just start doing it, actually.
that's great advice. Yeah. I mean, again, like you, like all of these venues that you've performed in, I think it's like it is like an artist's dream to be able to like do like to perform in all these places, and it's definitely, I mean, there's like lists and lists of places that you've been exhibiting and lecturing in and performing in. It's, you know, well deserved. And yeah,
Thanks
and
so much.
congratulations again. It's you know, it's, I mean, I'm looking forward to I for some reason between like I think I'm not sure, I just didn't, maybe before even, I mean, like I just couldn't, maybe I wasn't buying CDs or something, and I just somehow I yeah, just I was, you know, I listened to the first two albums and I love them, and I just didn't know you were producing more work. I didn't
Oh
know what
no,
was
we
happening. Like,
well no because
you did take a break or
Alex
something?
did a PhD somewhere. That's probably why she'll do the talk then separate. Because she
Right.
like did some other work with her, like she
Oh
did
yeah.
research other research and things, you know. And then I also worked on other musical, like I learned how to produce music and I did these other like sound projects. And yeah, also being a mother, like I took a lot of time with my kid. And yeah, it's you know, all these things, it's like it takes a while. And now we do have a song that's out and it's called Uploading the Human. And this is especially for the summer. And as Sydney said, he said, Mom, look, we're here in 2023 and the robots have landed. And suddenly AI is all over the place. And sure, AI has been with us for quite a while. But yeah, 2023 is the summer of the robots and the summer of AI. And exactly for this summer, you have this delicious song, Uploading the Human.
I'm gonna listen to it again. I know it sounds very cool, and
There's
it's on Spotify.
there's actually another sister on it. She plays the cello and lives in Woodstock. Oh, actually, she
What's her
lives
name?
in
Or if she...
another town. Her name is Cornelia Logan, and she plays cello on this one.
Oh, okay. So there's a total of how many Logan sisters? There's
We can
four?
do that with the
Or
next interview.
So is there anything else that we should talk about? I think that's usually kind of ended with that advice piece, and
Yeah,
I
that
think it's,
sounds
I loved
good.
it. You know, it makes a lot of sense. You know, to be proactive, and in the end, you know, I guess it's still just for artists just to be able to communicate, and just now we have social media to, you know, find people online to, you know, be able that audience is, I mean, again, that's different than like when you started in the 90s, right? Like, I mean, people, a lot of, I mean, all artists are like really pushing like Instagram and things like that. Maybe I saw a clip with an interview of you and Alex at one point, maybe talking about MySpace. This is a long time ago, like an
Oh,
old
yeah.
YouTube interview.
I don't know. Like, sure, Insta, one can post a bit, but I guess one can't take it too seriously, you know? But that also what happened in music. It's so annoying. That's like, you know, looking at like how many followers and posts and all that BS. It's just like, I totally don't go for it at all. I do like minimal labor on it. It's like so highly addictive. It's dangerous. So I don't want to get my paws touching too deep on it. You know what I mean? I'll be like a weekend user, or like a, you know, I only smoke when I drink, or kind of that kind of an attitude towards Insta.
Yeah, that's pretty smart, because I mean, it's so easy to get. I mean, yeah, there's so much written about, you know, everyone trying to portray themselves in the most ideal way.
It's gotten way too much value in this society. It's like, I know, it's, yeah, it's really like a Insta washing that's happening, and like, it's time to stop that. We just like,
yeah, I wonder if generation, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, like Generation Z, I don't know if they're for it or again, I'm not sure. They're using so many other different apps as well. And then, you know, things like, I mean, Twitch is amazing. Like, that's the gaming app. I mean, it's a website where people watch, mm-hmm, other kids play games and stuff. And I'm from Generation X, and watching someone else play games and then sending money or gifts and to watch people. I guess it's, I mean, and then Generation Z with, you know, kind of aspiring to be an influencer as a career, you know, you know, things are moving fast. And then you mentioned with AI and everything. So, and your son is Generation Z. Yeah. So, but you're instilling, you know, I think, there's one conversation that we had that I think a value that he might have, learned from you, which was, we were talking about, like Tarantino movies or something. And, or maybe not, maybe it's not from you. I mean, since Tarantino was affiliated with, like, you know, Weinstein and Miramax and stuff, he's just like, I'm not really going to support that and stuff. So that was impressive. And yeah, makes sense. So,
yeah.
I don't know if you ever talked to him about that. Like, no, that's probably just him then. Yeah. So, so thank you so much, for doing this podcast with White Hot Magazine, and thank you to Noah Becker, and
thank you, Brian. It's been very good.
Oh, awesome. I'm glad it went well. Yeah. And I'll speak with Alex Leslie Murray. That's the correct order, right? For
Alex Murray Leslie.
Oh, Alex Murray Leslie, yeah. Who's the other, what would be the word?
The other half of
Chicks on Speed. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And best of luck on your future endeavors.
Thank you.